Before we move on, I think we should just pause and take stock of how historic and transformational this service increase is that we're talking about. There aren't many, maybe any agencies talking about service increases right now, and definitely not at the scale that we're considering. And we're able to do that because of all the success we had last year raising capital funding to fulfill our zero emission vision. We raised $90 million for the hydrogen buses fueling facility. So when the one-time TRCIP materialized, we could invest that in service, whereas most agencies are using that to augment their capital zero emission transition budget. So it's a pretty incredible position to be in. Even if it is one-time funding, we're able to really invest this in the community and the service. So just wanted to make that point before we move into the discussion.
Thank you. All right, more discussion. Yes,
please. So a couple of questions. First, when the polling was done, the 425 people who gave kind of a two-thirds, I think 60-some percent in favor, were they seeing scenario A or scenario B?
They were seeing the original draft two. So we didn't poll on A, B. A, B kind of take elements from both. A is mostly the draft scenario with some of the changes that we incorporated based on the feedback. And B is the without UCSC.
Where I was going with that is it fair to say we don't have a clear read on the desire for cross-county commuters to the campus, despite the timing issues and the delay issues? Do you have a sense of whether we've got more students riding from Capitola Mall all the way to UCSC campus?
I don't have good data on that currently. We typically kind of do the summary quarterly, right? And we're just at the end of the quarter. We know that previous to the service change, about a quarter of Live Oak customers were UCSC students. And that was on routes that ran hourly, that required transferring to an hourly route, right? So with the direct connection, anecdotally, it seemed to be having the intent. We did see people riding through downtown on those routes. The reliability was a big issue. And we did pull on that. So, you know, Daniel showed the kind of the survey results. It was towards the bottom. It wasn't, you know, as high as frequency weekend service levels, but it was noted for sure. The reason we addressed it is because it kept coming up in the news.
Second question. Earlier this week at a Spark meeting, there was discussion mentioned bringing the Route 10 back. There was discussion possibly making it Route 11 so that it ran clockwise through the campus and sort of balanced the service with the 19 and the 15 if it's coming back during school term. You've already got the 18, the 20. The 18 is carrying twice as many riders per month as any other UC route. So it's certainly not, I kind of missed the comment, but it sounded like it was underperforming. It's doing really well. So
I think the Route 10 on the map is to show coverage on High Street. The way we route it around the campus will definitely look to balance counterclockwise.
So if we vote today to call it a 10, that's still have that flexibility.
Yeah, we'll still have that flexibility. All right.
Responding to Route 18, it's not that Route 18 is underperforming in any way. It's that if you're coming from across county and connecting towards campus, Route 18 is a longer path into campus.
Okay, thank you.
So among the east-west connections, it's the one that provides the least benefit coming from the east. Certainly got plenty of ridership and performing extremely well on the west side.
Yes. Thanks for the clarification.
Which is why we kind of split it in both scenario A and B.
I forgot the number. It's not bus 35, it's the other San Lorenzo Valley that I've been hearing too about, but I forgot the number. It's mentioned that's not been reliable.
Probably the 35.
No, it wasn't 35. They said not 35. And that on the slide, there was a second number.
Three. Is it the three?
Seems like it was 17.
Could be 17.
A number like that. Oh, wait. It is. Okay, not 17. Oh. All right.
Yeah, 35 more.
Both on the 17.
And that's, no, but you were right. The Route 3 said reliability issues. And now I kept hearing that some of the people weren't using it because of that. I was trying to be able to report back. Okay. I'll make a note. Thanks.
Great.
So with the recommended action today, we would just be approving the routes and sort of with the idea that depending on where our final budget lands, we would start rolling out June or as soon as possible. But right.
Yeah, it's less the budget than the operator availability. So I think we have we've authorized the hiring up to 80 new operators. I think we'll have 60 through training. So that's one piece of it. So theoretically, we could implement 3/4 of the service in June. The other big piece is having enough buses to do it, and that's something we're still working on. So the hydrogen, the 53 hydrogen buses aren't coming. They'll start coming at the end of the year, but we need a bridge in order to implement the service before we get the full order of the hydrogen buses. And so that's something we're still working on. We think we have a solution to get most of those by June, but those are really the impediments to implementing the full thing now. So we didn't expect to have the hiring go so well. So that's why we've always been targeting September. But we pretty much have the bus operators we need now, and now we need to work on.
I mentioned it because if we are looking at a budget gap and various ways to try to fill that, and hopefully we can identify the slots where we can, I think it would benefit us as an agency to push much of the service improvements and fare free as possible right up to potential vote on funding to continue them, right? Rather, I mean, the worst thing would happen if we have this gap where, oh, but don't you remember what we did for you last year, right? Kind of thing. That'd be terrible. So I think, I mean, that maybe a delay is a good thing. I mean, the other thing to consider is that we've got a ton of construction on our roads right now. I mean, the improvements on Highway 1, the initial bus on the shoulder segments there. I mean, those won't be done until 2025. The SoCal Drive improvements will be done at the end of this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, ultimately, our buses are going to be flowing a lot better when those improvements are done. And so that could also benefit a little bit of a delay because, you know, the public will be able to see the true benefit of these service improvements.
Yeah, it's a good point. And we are, even though we've been more successful in the bus operator hiring, we are still looking to target the majority of the improvements with September. It also aligns well with UCSC schedule and most of our ridership that fall. The only complicating factor there is that one-time SD125 TIRSA funding is available now to draw down. And through mid-2027, I think. So there's still an opportunity to kind of delay a little bit, except that we have the operators on staff. We want to put the service out there, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The work and the presentation. So depending on how conversations go with UCSC, what is the process to revisit scenario A should we adopt scenario B today?
We can come back. Yeah, just the deadline's gonna come back. But, you know, in some sense, we've already done the planning. I was going to ask, like, maybe we approve both, but I think we should come back and once we get greater detail and specificity.
And I guess the follow-up to that is, this is a lot of what ifs, but yeah. Let's say we eventually get to scenario A, how challenging will it be to shift from the service provision of scenario B to scenario A in terms of what the agency can handle?
It's because we didn't change one of those three routes. It's basically two major route changes. So most of what we implemented in B will stay the same when we move to A, but there will be a big route change on two route structures and then a new operation around the layover, but it's doable, definitely. Yeah.
And you'll need the extra drivers
and
the extra hours.
I'm just trying to understand the budget part of this, but I thought I understood that when the Metro staff went to RTC in December and were awarded the $32 million, they said this not fully funded that Reimagine Metro Phase 2, at least that's what was reported. The paper, what I understood from the budget presentation earlier today was that both phase one and two and free fares for everyone but students, that's a $3.4 million hit you're taking, that you're fully funded to do this through for the next two fiscal years. So I guess one question, but then hearing that there's a gap, and I guess maybe the gap is to go beyond the two fiscal years, but I'm trying to understand why there's a gap when it's reported to be fully funded with the RTC money, and it appeared in budget today to be fully funded for 2 years. So I don't understand where the gap is. And then second, even if there is a gap, I'm not understanding why the one route to close the gap would be for UCSC students to pay more than they already do. They pay, I think we pay close to $5 million a year of student fee funds they pay to Metro. So going forward, they would continue to pay that amount, but everybody else except the Brio students would be riding for free. So I think there's an equity issue there that perhaps, I don't know if that was discussed when the board discussed fare free for everybody but students. I don't understand why the presumption would be for this dream of dreams plan that is a great plan and that you went out and clearly secured great public support for, why it would fall to UCSC to fund a gap that I don't even see is there. But if it is there, why would that be on UCSC since this is a countywide service agreement?
Yeah, so no one here on the Metro side is asking UCSC students to pay more than they already pay. I mean, that's one way they could do it. We have some students here. That's one way phase two could be fully funded, but that isn't the assumption. The assumption kind of built into the service planning and service model is that because of this turnaround, Metro is now operating the same level of service that today Metro and TAPS operate. Because we go in one way, we come back the other way. Doing that means Metro is doubling the amount of service around the loop that it currently provides. So I think the assumption or one logical conclusion of that is, oh, the cost of doing that, there's a cost, right? Because it's double the revenue hours around the loop. And that could come from the TAPS budget, assuming that AFSCME drivers are willing to come over to Metro and there's, you know, other discussions that need to happen there. But the kind of the built-in assumption into that was, how can we, without duplicating service, come up with a rational way to provide service around the loop? So it ends up costing about the same for Metro to add that service to the loop than TAPS currently spends to operate the loop service, if that makes sense. That was kind of the built-in assumption. I think when we presented this at plan in December, to be frank, we hadn't fully quantified the effect of or the cost of duplicating service around the loop. And I would turn the equity question the other way. Directing all this service at UCSC is really unfair to the rest of the community. Because we would have ended up essentially doing this doubling of service around the loop, which would have meant we would have had to do much less in the rest of the community. So that's kind of why we pulled it back in scenario B and said, well, wait a second, if we are going to provide this level of service, then there's really no equitable way to do it unless there's more contribution coming from UCSC. And again, the assumption wasn't that students pay more. That is one way it could happen. The working assumption was, let's figure out a way to kind of use a part of the TAPS budget that's already used to operate loop service, if there's a way to rationalize that as part of Metro service in the future. So that was the assumption that we've now drawn back, frankly. So we love this dream of dreams. We think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. These frequent network of 15-minute routes extending from the highest demand point in the system, right, throughout Santa Cruz County. There's a lot of sense to that. But it's clearly going to take more work to come to an agreement of how can we actually make it work. And that's why we're putting forth the scenario B.
And did the budget that was presented earlier today in item 12 represent scenario B or A?
B.
Well, we'll follow up, but I think maybe an answer to the question is, I mean, aren't we also looking at instead of $32 million over 2 years, $32 million over 3 years now, thanks to mm-hmm. the legislature saying, hey, we'll give you everything in promise in year one, but year two is actually year two.
Yeah.
But that, obviously, that's
it will impact the cash flow in the final 2 years of this plant. But that actually has slightly less to do with this discussion around the service rent for CSE. We could implement scenario A, but it would mean gutting a lot of the other service that we've talked about with the community, because we're now really focused on doubling service around the, that's the issue, is the allocation of resources.
Regarding the real-time view of the trips, I've heard some comments from folks that it hasn't quite, I don't want to say been accurate, but yeah. And so I wanted to know, when you put these systems into place, how quickly that information is available to the customers. For some folks, they look at it, and I realize if you're out offering 15-minute service, oh, maybe they don't care. But if they have a longer wait, or they thought the bus was going to be here by now, or as you keep adding these things, then as you have added in the last phase, how has that changed? Is it pretty smooth, or are there some challenges with that?
So it's been a challenge with new buses. So currently what we're experiencing is all of the articulated buses that we got from San Diego to serve UCSC, none of those buses yet have the real-time information equipment installed. So most of the complaints that we receive are related to those buses. That's the 18 and 19 primarily, those routes. They're also the most frequent. So it's in some sense the less impactful. The bus should be coming every 15 minutes, but still, we advertise the system. It works on the rest of it. People expect it. They want to see it. So it's in process. The equipment has been ordered. It's being installed. But that
any little caveats at the bottom of that so that people who can't find, because that's very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know,
on all of the
disclaimer at the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, on all of the real time apps, it does indicate to the user whether or not it's tracking real time information or schedule information. So you can actually know, oh, this bus is tracking.
Right.
It's subtle.
Yeah.
But it's there. Whether or not it's tracking.
And it has to refresh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Further questions? All right, seeing none, we will now open the public hearing and take public comments on proposed Reimagine Metro Phase 2 service proposals.